right, welcome to another episode of Politics as Usual. Fellas, the election is here, it's come and gone. We will be discussing that momentarily, but we have a special, special guest. My homie, I've known her since freshman year of high school, when she came up to my high school trying to holler at all the other all-boys school players at the school. Who would have known that she would go to the height that she has gone to now? The pride of Rosati Kane, the pride of MICDS, the pride of Rhodes College, the pride of Texas Southern Law School, the pride of University of Houston Law School, and now District 100 state rep for the Texas. Man, my homie, everybody's homie. We love her so much, man. I'm so proud of this girl, Jasmine Crockett. Jasmine for 100 is with us here on Politics as Usual.
I don't know what to say. Clearly, y'all know that, like, we've known each other too long because he's talking way too much trash. But I'm super
also,
excited, though.
Also, keep in mind, I had a better ACT score than her. And we were, we
he's terrible man.
We get started, though.
About why he's smarter. Whatever.
But shout out to maybe I'll be able to see his page.
Hold on. I'm going to move your view in so everybody can see it real good.
That's messed up. That's messed up, man. Dang, they did you dirty.
Marco ain't right. Literally.
The Delta Aria book. Up. I literally was cleaning my house today. I found this morning.
Oh, my God.
Delta Aria.
That's messed up, man.
Also,
the proud of y'all see is Delta Sigma Theta as well. I mean, she done it all, man. Shout out to her.
You guys,
she let me have her car
worst.
For a whole weekend. It was, you know, I had a little small rental service, you know, one of the times I was in Dallas, man. So shout out to Jazz, man. She always showed love, man.
And I'm proud.
Keep in mind, though, it had no gas in it, though, too. So I turned the car on. It had like 6 miles to empty on it. And so
I literally was for free.
No, but it was 6 miles.
Dang, yeah, you got to put.
But it was for free.
Hey.
The least
but
you can
she
do is buy your gas.
Look. Hey,
and
did she have
Alexis.
You at least?
You was rolling a Lexus for free.
What Delta plates everywhere, so everybody that rolled up on me thought it was my girl car.
they start throwing up the diamond.
And then they roll up on me and they like, you got your girl car, huh?
Can't holler at you.
Nope.
So representative, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And I guess, can I start with the first question? I just want to run through because you ran against a sitting incumbent, right?
I did, technically.
It's
a technicality,
Yeah. And so can you run us through what made you run? And just, you know, through, I mean, what happened during your campaign? Like, what did it take for you to win?
Yeah, so first of all, y'all, I'm so happy to be here. It's almost like taking me back to high school. Clearly, all these guys have known me way, way too long. but we did grow up together. So I obviously hung around with, like, the best of the best. So I'm happy to be here. But so it's very interesting. So what happened is it's kind of weird, but the person that I consider myself to be replacing, his name is Eric Johnson. He's actually one of you and Marco's fraternity brothers. And so he actually held this seat for about a decade. Eric wanted to run for mayor of Dallas. So Eric actually ran for mayor. He won. Once he won, he vacated the seat.
Okay.
So he vacated the seat, and so they had a special election to just fulfill the rest of his term. In Texas, we have a part-time legislature. So a lot of states, they're like in all the time. In Texas, we only go in once every 2 years for about 6 months. And so once he won, we weren't in session. So there wasn't anything to do kind of in session, right? But there's still constituent services and things like that to kind of tend to. So they had an election and there were 5 people that ran. And I was like, I'm good on that because elections cost money. All you were going to get was a title. You weren't going to actually get to the actual job of writing laws, which is really the only reason I ran was to be able to write laws.
Right.
And so I was like, I don't want to spend my money that way because they had that election in November, and then it went to a runoff, which, I mean, you could kind of guess when you got five people running. So it went to a runoff that was January 28th of 2020, right? So January 28th, they have a runoff. And then we start voting in our early voting session, like February 17th or something like that. So literally like 2.5 weeks later, we're voting on the real race that actually gets you to Austin. So for me, I was like, you know, from a money perspective, I just don't think it's a good use of money because, you know, I'm using donor money. And right. I'm telling people, like, the way that I run is the way that I plan to operate an office. And so I just felt like it was a waste. So I didn't. So I was the only person that set out. I also thought incorrectly. I thought I was really being strategic, right? So I was like, oh, you know, once all these other people lose, they'll drop out and I'll only be running against one, maybe, you know, maybe two, three people or whatever that maybe decided to jump in the second round. No. All them suckers decided to run again. so that part I miscalculated. I thought I would at least keep myself from having so many opponents. So I was the only person that ran to get the seat that didn't run previously. And I was able to finally pull it out.
Okay. All right. Well, congratulations on that, man. We happy that St. Louis is repping in the Texas State House.
Yeah, absolutely.
So do you already, so you said you guys meet once every 2 years?
Yeah, it's real, it's tragic.
So hold on, so how do they handle the budget, or is the budget done every 2 years?
It is. Yeah, it's listen. So if we were to start to talk about the systemic issues, we would start with the legislature, because people don't really understand like how it works, right? So, you know, there are people that are like, hey, why didn't you just run to go to DC? And I'm like, because I'm a Texas lawyer who has oftentimes complained about Texas laws. So I'm like, if I decide to go to DC at some point in time, I got time for that. But right now I want to fix like Texas.
Right.
So we only meet, like I said, for 6 months. Now this session, like I just got my place in Austin and, you know, they're telling me, senior leadership is telling me plan on 9 to 12 months. So I may be here for a long time because we're in COVID. But what happened when COVID hit, since we weren't in session, the governor gets to call special sessions. He chose not to, right?
Ooh, so then he got to just
do executive orders on whatever he wanted to do, right? So it's right. Like, why I got to deal with all these people? Forget it. I'm just going to execute. So that's what he did. It's supposedly, like, the history of it is to be more of, like, a people-focused legislature, because it's not really like
spending less money
because
you're spending less money.
Either way, it's, listen, when I decided to run, this one rep was like, oh, you know, most reps are rich, right? I was like, I can imagine, because like the regular person can't run because we only get paid $600 a month. That's it. I'm pretty sure, I don't know how much McDonald's is paying. Something tells me I can go to McDonald's and make more money, right? Especially for the amount of hours that I'm gonna have to put in. So what happens is we only get paid $600, and they say that it's really because it's more like supposed to be the people, but I'm like, really, you don't get the people, because who can say I'm gonna take off of my job and I'm only gonna get paid $600 when I'm off my job, and then my job is gonna wait for me to come back. Like that's not what happens, right? So you end up with a lot of people that really have no idea of what like real people are going through that are writing the laws for the state, right? And so this was one of those things I was really breaking down to like the voters in my district. I'm like, do y'all even know what we do? Do you
right.
like
and
know
they probably don't.
No, they did not. They right. didn't understand. And so, you know, I felt like I don't know that I really campaigned a lot so much as I educated a lot, right? Mm-hmm. My district is a majority minority district. So it's 40% Black, 40% Hispanic, and about 20% white. But when you start talking about the voting population, the numbers get real crazy, right? So you end up with only 5% of the vote being Hispanic. You end up with 55% of the vote being Black, and you end up with 45% of the vote being white.
Whoa.
It's really messed up, right? But wow. I thought that I would run more so as it relates to a platform for minorities, because that's what the district is, regardless of who votes. What the district is majority minority. So my district actually is home to where Botham Jean lived, was killed, and worshipped. So police brutality, I just don't understand how you could have a candidate that couldn't adequately understand and advocate for police reforms, specifically from my district. Maybe from like a different district, it's okay. Maybe in the more rural areas or the more ritzy areas, but like in a district where the police killed a Black man as he was sitting at home eating ice cream, and it became an international issue. I just felt like, you know, this is my place. This is where I fit best to kind of address the needs. We also have, so in the state of Texas, we have 150 state representatives. And of all those districts, which Texas is a big state, if anybody didn't know, it's a huge state. And it's a very big state, but beyond that, we've got the 150 reps. And when we look at it, you know, I've got four of the top 10 highest incarcerated zip codes in the state in my one district. My one district has 4 out of 10. Mind you, there's 150 districts. I'm taking up 40% of the top 10 of the incarcerated districts. And, you know, we know the correlation between Black and Brown people in law enforcement and, you know, how that all works. And so I thought that I was definitely uniquely situated, being that I'm a criminal defense attorney, to really start getting smarter about how we deal with crime. So those were the two main things that I ran on. In the midst of COVID, they are not like the biggest thing that I have to go in and deal with healthcare, right? That has to be number one.
Right.
But yeah.
Real fast, you mentioned Jasmine. And let me make sure that again, let's put some respect on her name. This is attorney Jasmine Crockett here.
Yeah. We can talk about her history in a little while.
Because she actually worked on several high profile cases as well, right? I remember seeing her like on CNN and a few other shows. So, you know, but both of you all brought up executive orders. Now we know what it means. Well, some people think they know what it means when the president does it. What does it mean? Is it similar to when the governor does it, or what's the difference? And like, especially now in these type of special sessions and stuff, either one of you all could like speak a little bit about that.
Yeah, so from a Texas perspective, anytime we say executive, it just means kind of that executive branch. So the way that I would normally describe it to people in my district that were kind of confused is I'd say, listen, we have a president of the state of Texas. And our president's name is Greg Abbott, whether you like it or not, right? And so, you know, we have these different kind of levels. It's just like I'm the state level when it comes to writing laws. Like I'm on the state level of an AOC or Auntie Maxine, or, you know, all of those big names that most people know, they're in DC, but I'm in Texas on the state level, trying to write things that are only specific to the state of Texas. And so our governor has been able to, you know, write kind of these laws to kind of fill in, or they're more like directives, because it's not really laws. They're more like directives, like this is what you do right now. So I was literally just talking to somebody today, because I went, I got breakfast from my team. They helped to move me down before they got on the road. And there's this wonderful crepe place. And so I was like, oh, you know, I want a chai tea with Grand Marnier in it. So, you know, the law has changed, or the guidance has changed, so to speak, in the midst of COVID, where our governor was trying to make sure that restaurants were going to be able to make it. And so now we do like some to-go liquor options, right? So he's been able to kind of like fill in the gap in a little bit. For us, though, once we start a session in January, we'll start writing actual legislation that will be there. Like, we will pass legislation, and then it will be up to the governor as to whether or not he'll sign it into actual law. And some of the cool parts about this crazy time with COVID is just that, you know, for the longest, like, Louisiana is like what we think of when we think of to-go liquor.
I was just gonna say, Texas finna have the to-go. This is a movable option now. If this gets
no, possible. It is. It really is. But, like, you know, it's all about how you frame an argument. And I'm sure Chris can tell you through, like, his experience, right? Like, for us, it kind of just makes sense. But it's all about framing your argument to get, like, those that are on, like, the opposite side of the aisle to buy in. So our governor is Republican, but when those business people started calling, like, yo, we're losing money that we could be getting, we need you to make these adjustments. And it's like, oh, okay. So I actually just had a call with a lobbyist for some beer situation. And I was like, so what do you think about the Timberry situation, right? And so he was telling me, oh, I talked to the governor. We're pushing for this to be just like what it is, right? So he was basically cluing me in to the governor being on board if that's legislation that they kind of get either another rep to push through or a state senator or somebody like that, that the governor most likely will sign off on. And in tough economic times, I think that that's when we really start to go to our more liberal selves to get this money, right?
Right.
So
right.
That's kind of where we are right now. It's like, you know, my attitude is, I keep telling everybody this is my Beyonce year. So I'm trying to turn lemons into lemonade, number one. So we gotta add a little sugar to all of just kind of the sourness that we've been given with COVID-19. And so part of it is just trying to find new streams of revenue without putting the burden on, say, property taxes. And some people think, oh, property taxes, that doesn't really affect like the poor, but I'm like, yes, it is. Like, I don't know why y'all saying that stupid stuff, because the reality is that if you live in an apartment building, you may think you don't pay property taxes, but yes, you do.
You do, yeah.
Especially in a state like Texas where we don't have any rent controls. So listen, they're not gonna forego their profit. Okay. So if property taxes go up, they're going to pass that on to those that are renting. And so we all feel it. And so I'm trying to alleviate the stress of that and the displacement of that by saying, you know what, Texas, we need to go on and go forward with our casinos. We've got plenty of land. But you know, what happens is they almost act like if we don't legalize it, then they ain't going to gamble. That ain't true, right? Like, we know that from St. Louis. What happened in St. Louis? Like, we all grew up like in a time where we didn't have the boats. Mm-hmm. And then we did have the boats, yeah. Right? But what happened? Like, the boats didn't start in St. Louis, Missouri.
They started in Illinois.
They started in Illinois, right? So what happened? Everybody from St. Louis
used going to go over there.
Cross that bridge, right? So it wasn't that St. Louisans were like, oh, no, I don't want to gamble, right?
They just going to Windstar, right? Money. They just going to Windstar, right? Ain't the people in Dallas is going to Windstar?
Yeah, so they go to Oklahoma. They go to, as far as Dallas is concerned, but the state of Texas, we lose money to New Mexico, Louisiana, and Oklahoma every single day. And so for me, I'm like, yo, we got plenty of land in Texas. Like, it's plenty of just land just chilling, like, in these random places, because, you know, usually when you bring in something saucy like that, it's not going to be next to like the elementary school, right? No. Not going to be an option. But there's ways to keep it out of kind of the areas that we don't want it in, but to have it far enough where you can feel like you're driving to Oklahoma or further, you know what I mean? But you can still be in the state of Texas. And so it's a great stream of revenue. And for some of the smaller towns, I'm sure that they really are gonna be really big on it, just because small towns usually rely on like one or two industries. So when I was in Texarkana, they relied on Cooper Tire and International Paper. And they also had an Army Depot, Red River Army Depot. So really, if like one of those three things shut down, it would have been devastating to the entire economy. And so small towns I almost like Detroit. Like Detroit was like the biggest small town ever, right? Mm-hmm. Because when we ended up with like the automobile industry issue, it like practically shut Detroit down. Like Detroit was like,
what we gonna do, right? Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So like, it was like our biggest small town, right? But like small towns function that way every day. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of opportunity on the gambling front to make sure that we're keeping some of our money in the state. And that would relieve the stress of, you know, we don't have an income tax in the state of Texas. So lots of people love that we don't have an income tax. And so we get lots of businesses like Tesla is moving into Austin, which is also complicating my life right now as a new legislator. But, you know, Tesla is moving from, I don't think they're going to shut down Cali, but there was all this drama in the midst of like COVID, right?
Yeah,
like,
the governor and Elon Musk was going back and forth.
Yeah,
man. They're building a new factory. They're building a gigafactory in Austin.
Yeah, we've always been very business friendly. And part of the reason is just that, like, we've got Toyota. Toyota is right there north of Dallas right now. So we always end up bringing, like, big industry because they're thinking about, oh, well, our employees won't have to pay income taxes. But what's happening is that our property taxes are just getting off the chain. Like, absolutely stupid, because that's really, like, a big generator of money. So if we're going to balance it out, we've got to have these other things. So coming from a very safe district, I'm pushing for like full legalization of marijuana.
Perfect.
Texas, huh?
Yeah, I said, perfect. Yeah, that's perfect. That's perfect for the state. Yeah, that's good.
No, it's a great solution. And so, you know, being where we are right now, it's the best time to be able to actually jump on a lot of these opportunities, whether it's gambling, whether it's, I talked to one of the distilleries that's in a neighboring district that I'm going to try to get in redistricting because it's a redistricting year. There's like a local distillery. And so I was asking them, like, tell me about what it's been like living in COVID and that kind of stuff. And one of the things they talked about is that we don't allow online liquor sales here. And I was like, we don't. I mean, I didn't, you know, if I want to get something, I just go to the liquor store. But
y'all look at ridiculous situations, ridiculous down there in general.
Well, you're right. Right. And it's so I've had all these liquor conversations. It's going to be a very, so besides it being my Beyonce year, I'm like, I'm the vice girl, right? Like liquor, gambling, and weed. And like weed. I'm trying to get this money. Like, and I'm trying to make it to where it makes sense. And honestly, you know, in my district, it completely works out. But the reality is that like MLK is in my district. If y'all want to get an idea. Okay.
Yeah. Like, yeah. All right. I was going to ask that.
Chris was going to ask, was MLK in your district?
And Walnut Park. Yeah. Walnut Park is over there in Texas.
I mean, you know, right. So those are streets that I have. So like nobody in my district is anti-weed. They like, oh no, you know, and the even from an older generation, a lot of people were saying we've been trying to use it because they've got cancer or whatever their issues are. You know, I've had all kinds of conversations like with people of all colors, and they were absolutely like for the full legalization. So I've already started talking across the aisle to people about full legalization. I don't think we're going to get there, but we legalized in 17, we expanded in 19, and I plan to push for full legalization, knowing that it's just going to lead to a little bit more of expansion. This, because they won't even let doctors decide. So doctors can decide, you know, when you're going to get opioids and whatever else you want, right? But when it comes to weed, it's more like legislated. Like, if it means this, 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 and this, then maybe you can give it. And so I've talked to, we only have 3 grow facilities in the entire state. Really? That tells you how low the demand is. Yeah, the demand is super duper low because of the restrictions on the law. Because clearly Texas is huge. So why would we only have 3 dispensaries, right? And right now, like I talked to one of the dispensary owners and he was like, yo, I've yet to make a profit. I'm like, what? Yeah, but you got in on the ground floor. I know what you want. You know you're going to get your money one day, right? But like, he's still not there. So I think that it presents opportunities for those guys. And I think we will absolutely grow our marijuana situation, our gambling situation. And I'm going to push for online liquor sales. Cause you know, we got Tito's down here. I'm really? Like,
it's in Austin. Yeah. It's in Austin, I believe.
Yeah. Tito's. We yeah. got like, and Deep Eddie's. We got every, I'm like, seriously, we don't sell this online. I didn't know, you know? So that's another great stream of revenue versus saying, oh, I'm going to go ahead and increase your property taxes. Like, we can't do that.
Yeah. So Jasmine, you're talking about a ton of legislation. Do you already have like your first round of legislation that you plan to propose?
I thought I put my phone on, my bad. I thought I put my phone on airplane. I was getting called.
Somebody, they blowing you up.
So I actually have so much legislation. Okay. That's all. So we have a Google Drive, my team. I can't officially file until I'm sworn on January 12th. Luckily, our incoming speaker, he's a Republican, but he called me and asked for my support because, you know, we were gonna have to vote for a Republican because, well, yeah, we weren't in the majority. And yeah, he called me and he told me, he was like, I just wanna make sure you know that my wife is a criminal defense attorney. Like, there's certain laws that I can't afford to be on the opposite side of. And I was like, this is the best I'm going to get, you know, with a Republican, is at least one that is friendly to criminal justice reform. So I don't really know what we're going to get. I've already been approached by other members. So one of the cool things about me, there's only, I think, about 11 incoming freshmen. Five of us are Dems, six are Republicans. And I don't know that anybody else has as clear of a niche personality as I do. So actual members have been reaching out to me saying, hey, I've got this bill, I would love for you to jump on this bill with me, that kind of stuff. Has to do with projectiles and law enforcement. I was like, did you go check my Instagram? Because I already posted about it. So
you're gonna see that people steal legislation. Don't talk about nothing, because as soon as you talk about it around the group, somebody gonna be filing it. So let me ask you, do you guys have a branch that they write the legislation? They write the legislation for you guys, or you guys have to propose your own?
No, we don't write it. So we have Ledge Council. So,
okay,
you know, I've tried to educate those in the community. I'm like, if you have an idea, let me know what your idea is, and I'll submit it to Ledge Council. So they do all the research about, you know,
section, we have the same thing here.
But the good part about me being a lawyer, though, is if it comes back and it's like, that's not exactly what I was saying, I can actually, like, I can submit whatever I want to. Like I understand legislation enough. So that's the good part. So the other thing is that, so literally about the projectiles, like, so I'm dealing with all these protesters in the midst of George Floyd. And I ended up picking up a case where a guy had his eye shot out in Dallas. Ooh, and so I was like, okay. So I've got legislation that I want to deal with as relates to these less than lethal projectiles being used for the purpose of crowd control, right? Because this idea that is less than lethal, I'm like, dude, you could have killed him. Like, I'm sorry, he was bleeding out and y'all wouldn't do, anyway, whole other issue. Not gonna go down that road. But so I said that I was gonna propose that legislation and whatever in light of that. There's another rep that's actually around this area near Austin. And so she's in a flip seat, and it's a young Caucasian woman. Not really, I would imagine that her district ain't really about this life.
They ain't feeling it. No.
My district is all about this life. But either way, she approached me and she's like, maybe we can do a press release and, you know, whatever. And I was like, okay. But for me, you know, some of the senior members are like, yo, whatever pieces of legislation you want to push, even if somebody else has it, you write it anyway. So my bill number is going to be behind her. But the way that I can potentially hustle my bill through to get my bill to be the one that actually makes it to the floor is a little different, because it's just certain pieces of legislation that people are going to look at me as really being a little bit more of an authoritarian of. So like, it would make more sense than whatever. So if it's my bill that makes it through, then what I would do still is be like, hey, you can co on this right, with me. And then that way, you know, I can literally go back to my district and say, hey, I authored this. Like, this is my deal that went through. Because sadly enough, so the previous rep, who's now the mayor, in his 10 years, he never authored and passed a piece of legislation.
What? In 10 years?
10 years.
But you know what, though? Let me not, I shouldn't have said that, because I know a lot of people, and not a lot, it's a few people locally that has done that, but budgetarily, they have brought back millions of dollars. So, I mean, I hope that that's the case for him.
That's not the case.
What happened?
You know, it's one of those things. I mean, you know, you probably know better than anybody else that, you know, out of sight, out of mind. Like, when you're off writing legislation, like, city council has to be like the worst job ever, right? Because you in them people's face, they call you all the time. Ain't nobody ever happy. Like, somebody want a speed bump, somebody else don't want
a
speed bump.
Chris,
like,
know that from probably from transitioning from state rep to alderman.
Yeah, it's like
it's a big difference.
It's really bad. And honestly, you know, he was elected over and over and over for a decade, but now I'm like, I don't know that he could run for dog catcher. Like, I mean, we gonna see, but like, being the mayor, like, people are not happy, and I'm like, really, it's a matter of like, once you're elected, you're good. You don't, at least in Dallas, like, they don't pay attention to what you do. So the rep before that was there for 10 years and she passed two bills. So honestly, the only thing that I really wanted to do, even though they're saying we're only gonna pass 10% of the bills, I was like, I just wanna pass four bills. So but that, you know what, though? When I run for re-election.
Yeah, that you could say that.
Yeah, I passed twice as many bills in one session that have been passed in our district for 20 years, right?
But even if you don't, just your overall presence, like, probably is different than than the folks' spot that you took, you know?
Oh yeah, no, you're absolutely right. So the now mayor, he is a lawyer, but he's a corporate lawyer. He's never been, you know, like, with the people like that, right? And I say he's my predecessor, but technically I have another predecessor. So the girl that won the special election, I actually knew her. She was finishing law school with one of my interns. So I've always had like a pretty robust intern program. And so my intern is like her best friend. So she finished law school in May of 19. That first election, she announced in June of 19 that she was running. She took the bar in July of 19, failed the bar, and continued running. She was the establishment pick. And so, you know, she literally had, like, there's, I don't know of any other race in the country where Beto O'Rourke got involved in the primary at all, right? So yeah. Beto was brought into our primary to campaign for her. He put her on all his social media, Instagram, Facebook. He actually came to Dallas and knocked doors. And this is basically right after he dropped out of the presidential. So here it is. He was on like the national stage as a presidential candidate. He came to our little district, knocked doors for her. They did robocalls, everything. She had our county judge, which our county judge was covered on national news too, because our governor wasn't doing anything in the beginning, right? So Trump didn't do nothing. So there was no directive like on a federal level. And then our governor didn't do anything. So our county judge being like who everybody followed, like Houston followed after our county judge in Dallas. And so that guy was supporting her. It was like every Wendy Davis who like had this crazy run for like governor in the state of Texas. Like all these big names were behind her, and it was this full push by the establishment. And she ended up with approximately $500,000, a chick that had just graduated law school and could not pass the bar. And I was like, what is going on? You know, and
she got a half a million and you still walked it. So you should be feeling great.
Yeah.
What's the makeup between Dems and Republicans there in the House? What's the split?
So we're 67 Dems and 83 Republicans.
That ain't bad if you get a few. You get a few.
Hold on, hold on, Chris. That's better than Missouri, ain't it?
Yeah.
Oh, no, No, they were poised. So the deal was we had all this money pouring to Texas to flip the House. So we only needed 9 seats somehow. I don't know how to do the math, but we only needed 9 seats and we could flip the House. And so when I tell you they poured in ridiculous amounts of money, for instance, the trial lawyers, which I hit up the homie, there's actually a bruh that sits on the board for the trial lawyers. And I was like, listen, they gave this non-trial lawyer, my opponent, $22,500. I was like, and now they're giving all of these candidates that are running for office who are trying to flip seats $100,000. I got 5. I'm gonna need them to
95 more. Like, 95 more. Y'all, hey, you should have sent him a bill for 95,000.
I'm just so, like, what are you? And I let them go. I was like, okay. I mean, literally that one organization was giving every single person that was running to flip a seat $100K. And then those that had flipped seats in 18, we actually picked up 12 seats in 18. So those that flipped seats in 18 and they wanted to hold on to, they gave each of them 50K.
Yeah.
Like I don't know where 5K.
That's a good strategy
but
though.
I need some more.
That's a good strategy. So what you're saying is right now, I mean, the campaign laws are unlimited. That's what it sounds like.
Oh, it is. Oh yeah.
I mean the contribution laws. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, no.
What?
We ain't got no limit.
So Ms. Ho, so Chris, Missouri has a contribution limit?
Yeah, ours is minimal now. Marco may know more about that because he ran after me. I know when I was in office, when I first got in office, the most that somebody could give me was like $500. It was like $500 and some change. And then that changed and it upped to, man, I forget the amount, but it wouldn't, look, it wasn't nothing nowhere near what she's getting. So look, so how much did you raise?
I raised overall a little over 100 initially.
That's good.
I raised a little over 100. My late train money, they said to function in session because I will be paying for like my housing and
hold on. You can pay for your housing on with the campaign money.
Texas is real jacked up.
Hold on. So, hold on. Before we even go there, hold on. We got to do it. Hold on. Look at, hold on. Fellas.
What?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, man. Hold on.
We're about to get back in politics in Texas.
Stop. So if me, Chris Carter, I'm a dog. I want to give you, Jasmine, $1 million, right? $1 million to your campaign.
Yes.
You can go out and spend that $1 million on housing.
Yes. Okay, so let me
look at Chris.
It's really bad though.
DeMarco looks disgusting.
But Chris, how much were you getting paid when you were in office?
So they pay us, and you get like 45, then you get like a per diem. But that is considered part time too. So we are in session 6 months out of the year, and for those 6 months, you are coming to Jeff City. I mean, you're getting paid a per diem, like gas mileage to drive there, and they give you like money for like living, but it's not like, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like that. But Jeff City, look, we had a 5-bedroom house that was in the nice part of Jeff City. We probably paid $600 a month. And it was like, it was me, Don Calloway, Jason Kander, Stephen Webb, like it was like a whole bunch of freshmen legislators that, and we all just paid like $100 a month or $150 a month.
Yeah, no. So let me tell you about my life and why it probably is so bad. So we get $600 a month is our actual salary. So our official salary is $600 a month. When we are in session, we do get a per diem of $221 a day. So you know, you can use that for your hotel or whatever, right? But because we don't really get paid, most people take the per diem and they use that for like their real life, right? Like, because still got cribs back in the district, right?
Yeah.
And you're not working really. I mean, I'm about to be hustling, but like you're not working like you would really be working. You're not really maximizing your income no matter what, right? So most people are like, yo, you gotta raise money. So listen, I finished my race. I won with my on election day, I was up by 92 votes over my opponent. Then something happened. I don't remember what happened. And then I fell down to like 89 above her. And then they finished with like everything, like all of the overseas and stuff. And the final was that I was up 90 votes over her, right? So I'm like, okay, I finished this race. We got $2,000 left. We did a good thing, right? And I got these calls from these representatives and they were like, so you got to go back to raising money. I was like, I don't understand. I won my race. What you mean? They were like, so they were like, if you want to pay for your housing, I was like, don't we get a per diem? I was like, I thought that's what they were like. So if you want to pay for your housing and you want to actually use their per diem for like something else, you need to raise money. And I was like, I don't understand. They were like, the money that you raise, you can use that for your housing so that you can actually have some money to fuck. I was like, really? Because in my mind, like, logically, it didn't make sense. And so I was like, oh, well, I just need to find a crib to buy. Like, that makes no sense because then it'll appreciate and whatever. They're like, no. So you can't buy nothing. I'm like, I don't know.
Like, the rules is-
You can't flip it.
You didn't, right. So you didn't say that.
Chris think he's for the flip.
Hey, I'm about to go and buy everything.
Yeah, no,
you got a new, Chris got a new whip. So, he got a new crib.
No, so it's real. So the deal is, I'm like, so I gotta blow the money. Is what you're telling me. I gotta make sure somebody.
So it's Bruce's. It's like Bruce's Millions, the movie's Bruce's Millions, where you gotta use it up before the end of your turn. Basically,
I got it. Yeah, well, I can hold on to it. I can do whatever I want to, but I can only use it in certain ways. So I'm gonna get some more information in freshman orientation, but like renting my apartment, it's all been on donor money. So after I won and beat her, there were some like PACs and things like that. They gave me some money. And so I was able to get money. But when I tell you Austin is stupid expensive, I was like, this just feels wrong to waste this much money, right? So literally the apartment I was looking at before I finally got this one, because it finally became available, because my building is at 96% occupancy. The apartment was $4,000 a month.
Damn.
Unfurnished. That's crazy.
Unfurnished. I was like, do you understand how bad a crib I can have for that kind of money? Like, it was.
But look, hold on. But look. So if you can pay for your housing, I know you can pay for your car, right? The transportation
so,
and everything.
So they do have a deal. You technically can. Now I think that's pushing things. I mean, the reality is
Chris.
No, because it's not like it's my crib at
Marcos
home.
Marcos moving too.
In order for me to have, you know, my position, I gotta maintain residency at home. I can't be like, well, I'm gonna just go on and let this one go and then I get it. Like, no, yeah, you gotta maintain your residency. And then, but you got to be here to work, right? So it's almost like paying for it. Like you could, because literally, I talked to the executive director for the Black Caucus, and he was like, "A lot of money." He was like, "You know, they got the La Quinta, and they give free breakfast." I'm like, "I'm not going to the La Quinta. I'm only getting $7 a month added in."
Hey, you in an extended stay?
Hey. Switch up on them quick. Nah, bro. You can't eat there.
Yeah, I was like, I was like, I'm gonna just have to get on this phone and try to get some more dollars, cause I can't do this. I'm already not getting paid, and then you telling me I should holler at the La Quinta. I was like, I can't do it. He was like, it's right by the Capitol. I was like, I hear you, but I can't do it. So, so we can't raise money in the 30-day window before session starts, and we can't raise money in the 30-day window after session ends.
Why not? That makes no sense at all. Why?
Listen,
why
it's a lot that doesn't make sense. I personally feel like
a plot to stop a corruption? That's crazy. People gonna take money. But it don't matter.
So I'm with you, right? But like when you're selling it to the average voter, sounds like a good thing, don't it? It's all about like making voters think that, oh, Well, there's no way they, man, whatever. You get your money before and after session. Like, it's not a, it doesn't change anything. So, so I've got freshman orientation all week. And then next Wednesday, the following Wednesday, I'll have like my last fundraiser before the deadline on the 12th. So this is the last day that I can like take any money or whatever. And, you know, it's just going to be to get me through session, because even when it comes to the pay for my staff, I have no idea how much money I'm going to get. We are supposed to get $15,000, which is, I'm not trying to be shady to anybody, but that ain't nothing. Like when you're talking about paying, front,
like they handing you cash, like here, $1,500. I mean, $15,000.
Now they,
Chris
they
is literally trying to flip bricks on here. Like here. So like, I get 15 front? Right up front.
Yeah.
Give me that. Well, give me that.
So, yeah. So your entire budget for all of your staff in district and in Austin is 15 grand a month when you're in session. And then it's supposed to drop down to like 13.2 or 13.5 when you're not in session. Right.
So hold on. So Jazz, so 6 months of the year, your staff is getting 15, you get 15K a month cash.
That's nothing.
And then the 6 months after you, when you back home, your staff can get 13.
Well, it's for a year and a half. That's all
that's
I've got.
Nothing.
So it's not because, normally in session here, most people have a chief of staff, they have a legislative director, and then they have a legislative aide. And then you normally keep somebody in district because when I'm here, I need somebody that's able to deal with the people that are actually in district, right? And so you normally have like a district director. So you usually have at least 4 employees, and that's not enough money. So you also use the money that you raise to supplement the pay to your staff. So it really is a bad job. So, you know, I think I'm like, oh, okay, well, the reason we don't have the limits is because we are required to pay for so much ourselves instead of them really like giving us like what we really need. So I've got a staff of like 5 people. I haven't officially extended my offer, but I'm pretty sure he's going to accept it. I'm taking on for my legislative director, a young Black guy who actually has a law degree out of Georgetown and is past the bar.
That's crazy.
And I'm having to give him pennies. I'm like, I hope you understand. You know, I'm like, we ain't got no money, right? But he's about this life, so I adore him already. But it's a lot.
Yeah,
Chris, how did they handle that for the Missouri? How did they handle that same situation for the Missouri side, Chris?
Well, no, so they pay to have us a legislative assistant in our Jeff City office at all time. And I think she made like close to 35,000. And, you know, it was always great. Like it always worked out. Now back home, you could split that money, but then you would be shorting your legislative, you would have been shorting your legislative assistant that was still in your office, working, answering phones, doing, you know, putting out your newsletter. So what I did, and Marco seen it, I had a ton of interns and just community volunteers. Well, like I basically, like I gave them access to see, you know, what a legislator goes through like every day. And, you know, I basically gave folks who were retired like a job or something to do in my office. And I didn't have to pay it. Like I would try to give folks money, but they wouldn't take it. So, I mean, I was just blessed really to just have a community based ran office. But at the same time, I just utilized interns, like the honest truth, like John Collins. He was my intern for a while and he went to Lincoln and during the year. I mean, yeah, while we actually ran sessions, John would spend some time in the office between my office and Senator Jamila Nasheed, and then when we came back home, he was in the district, you know, doing stuff for both of us. So it just worked out, man, where we just had a ton of interns. But you know, I think things are extremely different up there now. But yeah,
well, you were in a better situation then, because I get 15 grand a month.
Yeah, let me ask you both this.
Oh, yeah.
It's one thing.
Hold on, you get 15 grand a month?
I'm in a better situation, sorry.
Yeah, you get 15 a month?
Yeah, that's what I was saying, Chris. Chris was thinking 1500.
No, he was thinking 15 grand for the year.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, what?
No, they get 15. That's why I was like, I'm gonna kind of go work for Jazz. Second.
No, I'm like, Like I'm gonna have. I think I have five. I have five staff people. Then I'm gonna end up paying out of that 15 grand. So I've got to put campaign money.
Stretch it out. Yeah, you got to stretch it out.
Marco had a question. Yeah, so I had a question. So, you know, it reminds me of when I talk to people who want to start a business, right? They like, you know, it's one thing to know how to be a plumber, right? But it's another thing to actually run a plumbing business. Like you got different skills to deal with different crap. What is it about being a politician where you ran, both of you all ran because you wanted to do stuff for the people? But now you also got to take on the business side of running an office, being a manager, being a full-time fundraiser almost. Like, how does that play out, and how do you all see that impact like the political realm?
Jazz, I'll let you go since you fresh on it.
For me, you know, it's the managing part is not really that bad because I have my own firm. So I've been kind of managing people. So that part, and I was a business major. So that really plays more so to kind of like my skill set. It is different. And I think that there are a lot of people that struggle when they have to kind of come to that realization. I think for me, the biggest part is kind of asking for money. I think fundraising is something that like all candidates really struggle with for like different reasons. Like, what may be most difficult for me may not be most difficult for somebody else, but we both are struggling in the same way, right? I think that we're not really programmed to ask people for stuff and ask people for money. Like, it feels like begging. And so it's like, I don't want to do this, right? Like, because for me, I'm programmed, if there's something that I need or want, I need to go work and make my money and get it. And this idea that I'm like, okay, I need money, and I got to take meetings. And it honestly feels like a form of prostitution. I'm just saying. I mean, because like, you're like taking these meetings or whatever. And I'm like, I know you want something. That's the only reason you giving me some money, but I'm not necessarily going to give it to you. Like, it's this terrible like thing.
Sounds
and,
like dating. You know, you said it sounds like dating.
Or dating, right? Yeah. So, you know, I always have these conversations with people because I tell them, one thing that you'll always get out of me is you'll know where I stand, whether you like it, love it, or hate it, right? And so I'm like, you know, it's interesting because it's one organization. It's weird, but you know, they took a meeting with me, and I knew that overall, like, we didn't really perfectly align. But the reality is that, like, even a broke clock is like right two times a day, right? Mm-hmm. So even like an organization that doesn't completely or really align with you, there are opportunities, right? So I was trying to find out and understand if those opportunities like existed where we saw things kind of like the same. And so we got out of that meeting and they ended up sending me $1,000 check. And then the other week they like hit me up. It's like, hey, we got another check for you. I was like, oh, for real? But when I had that meeting though, I told her, I said, listen, we're probably going to disagree more than we agree, right? But I'll always be respectful because I appreciate good legislation. So if you bring something to me, if it's like what makes sense to me for my district, I'll be your biggest champion. Like, I'm telling you that. But if it doesn't, like, I'm going to try to cut that stuff off, right? But I'll always give you the respect of telling you where I stand. And if you got questions, I'll be able to back up whatever I got to say. And I'll be able to engage you in conversation, right? But I make it clear that, like, ain't nobody buying me at all. Like, I appreciate that check, but that don't mean you're going to get what you want. You know what I mean? So it's fundraising is probably the part that is hardest for especially a Black candidate to really transition into. And then when you start talking about like asking your friends for money, like Black people, they want signs, they want swag, they want it all, right? Like they, like we are swaggy people, okay? Yes. Like we love to like represent, especially if we like someone like, oh, I want DeMarco on my chest. Like, you know, like we really want like all the swag, right? But for whatever reason, like, nobody really
don't want to get
like,
no money.
Where does that swag come from? How do we get swag? Does it just show up when you decide to run for office? And so it's really tough to, like, you know, if there's one thing that I could really dedicate my time to, it would be to educating, like, the Black community overall on how to support our Black candidates. Because we always want them to be our cheerleader. We always want them to champion our issues. But the reality is that we don't give them the support that they need to get elected and to stay in office, right? Like, we don't do that. I will say that we're very good about kind of hitting autopilot. I think that's what happened in the Clay family, is that, like, Black people were like, that's the name I know, Bloop,
yep,
right?
Yep,
don't know nothing about nothing that they done or whatever.
Right. But,
like, we do get on autopilot, right?
It's people, like Distinguished Gentleman, if y'all remember the movie Distinguished Gentleman with Eddie Murphy.
Eddie Murphy.
Yeah. Yeah, we get on autopilot and we keep voting and we don't challenge and we don't question, we don't research. It's like, once you win, a lot of times it's Black candidates, they stay in forever. John Lewis, I don't know how long he served, right? Like, once you get there, like, you're good to go if your base usually, like, is a Black base, unless you do something really crazy. And half the time, we still vote for you, right? Like, we had a
shout out to Kwame Kilpatrick.
Right.
Man, I can't wait to have
right. And then we had a in Dallas, we had this county commissioner. He was under federal indictment for like 20 something cases, right? He didn't been in office forever. While he was under indictment, he had to go through an election. You think that he lost? He didn't. Like, they was like, that's cool, whatever. The feds is coming for him because that's how the people be acting. Like, you know, like, he goes, like, it was just, I'm just like, oh my gosh, right? And so, you know, that's the bad part, but we really got to get better about creating these support systems so that we don't just have great candidates that are out there, but they don't have the backing that they need to make it. Because those great candidates are usually the ones that are probably put into those positions where they don't have the backing, right? Because the big guys need a puppet, right? Like, the ones that's gonna throw all the bread, they like, oh, this is a Black seat. Well, we just need a Black face. But we got you. We gonna pay to have you be our person and be the Black face. So the community feels like they're getting what they need. So fundraising and financing candidates and even volunteering. We made up the difference in money with volunteers.
Volunteers, so
I have more volunteers than I've seen anybody really have on a state house race. Like, I've not had, I mean, we had probably well over 200 volunteers overall, like, in our campaign. That made up the gap for what we didn't have in money. Because you need money to get the word out, right? Hey,
right.
But if you got people, you good. So, you know, we just got to do better and we got to educate people. I think we're still very new to politics to a certain extent because you have a race. Hey, I'm talking about people getting on autopilot. I ain't throwing no shade. The Carter family has been like St. Louis famous forever, right?
Nah,
in
right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
look at DeMarco.
I mean, literally, like, before I ever...
You gotta go see Chris Carter if you want to run in St. Louis.
Hey, no, no. Chris be over Crown and Kings.
Before I ever knew Chris, I knew Paula. Because my mama knew Paula, right? Like, I knew Paula Carter. Like, I mean, like, that family has, you know, there are Black dynasties that really get created. And if there's a Black, there's, who is the mayor? It's the Carters, and then it's a, who's that mayor, y'all? Bosley.
Yeah.
But nobody else really came after him, though.
No, yeah, no, they got, no. They got, so he got a,
it's a gang of
brother, brother and a sister.
Didn't he have a, he had a son run, did his son run against you, Chris?
No,
that's who did son run against?
His son is an alderman now in the city, and his daughter is a state representative.
Okay, there we go. So those are like the two, like, I don't know anybody else, but like those are like
now you have the Hubbard.
It's the Hubbard family now, right? The Hubbard family. Rodney Hubbard.
You still have the Hubbards, you have the Bosleys, and
the Walkies.
Where do Hubbards come from?
Rodney Hubbard.
The Hubbard's big.
Rodney Hubbard.
What schools did they go to?
They got like downtown. Oh, what's that? They what's some projects that
Biff
they
Ward? Oh, they bought the Cochran. No. They more on the south side, right? They more at the
Old Fallon Place, north side.
It's like Old Fallon Place. North.
Okay, Old Fallon Place.
Hold on.
Because Bruce Franks defeated Penny Hubbard, and that was definitely south side. So
yeah it's over there. It's the project, the Peabody projects, them projects over there by SLU.
Yeah, okay. but they have two Hubbards that are all defeating people. And I think one is a committee person still, but you had the son who was a state representative, then ran for the Senate.
No, you got two aldermen, fifth ward and 26th ward, both aldermen. Yeah,
look, Rodney Hubbard's plugged in with like Rodney Hubbard when he was running for state senator, when Christina was running. Such an entertainer was his main dude for his his banquet, his fundraising thing. For it was like a roast for Rodney Hubbard and like a donation thing right when Chris was first running.
Robin
Wright Jones.
Robin got out.
The wife of Mike Jones.
You got the Roberts family too on the low too.
Still. Yeah.
The Roberts. Still when we were younger though. The Roberts was more of a dynasty back then.
Yeah.
I mean, now not so much. I think that political dynasties are dead now. Like people want real, you know what I'm saying? And when you see that, you just see like, I can only speak for us. Like we held a certain area for 20 plus years, you know? And I mean, within them 20 years, we would like to say that we made a major impact on the community just in terms of economic development and, you know, just changing crime and just building up our people in that area. And I think that it got to a point where, you know, being in a place so long, you also get hit with all of the problems that's still there or that has been there that you just haven't touched it. And, you know, people, they get tired of Chris Carter or, you know, the same names running. And I mean, because for them, they look at it like, oh man, it's just a family business. But for us, we look at it like, man, we grew up in that. And this is something that we believe that, you know, it's in our heart. And Marco's seen it. Daryl too. Yeah. They seen it firsthand with me and with my uncle, that it was more than just a job, you know? And I mean, you'll see that. I mean, I could tell that you have that same passion.
But I will say, dynasties are not dead in St. Louis City, St. Louis County.
You don't think so?
I mean, so for example, you just had Elbert Walton Gray's daughter become state senator.
What was her name though? They had a different name.
Mosley Walton.
Nah, you can't. It ain't Mosley Walton. It's Mosley.
Walton.
But they the same.
So you got Elbert Walton Gray in St. Louis County, right? So, I mean, sorry, not Elbert Walton Gray. That's Elbert Walton. His daughter is on the county council.
Is she on there or did she lose?
Rochelle Walton Gray.
Yeah.
Her husband is Allen Gray, state rep. Then there's Jay Mosley.
He's still a state rep.
And his wife just became the state senator. Like, so it's four,
four or five my bad. I'm way off
in that group. That's North County.
Yeah.
Like, and then you got the Bosleys, the Hubbards, and formerly the Carters, right? So I'm agreeing. The thing I think I see that is different is that Black people no longer, like, we already had our first. We're done with our first. Like, we even had our first Black president. We saw how that only provided incremental change. So I think some of us are at a place, not enough of us are at a place where, like, hey, like, okay, we, it's no more about just having representation, and it's no more of just like, I know people who really literally said, I'm supporting Chris Carter because of Paula, right?
Those
people have passed away or either moved away. I think that's the difference now, that we that people moved away. Like, when I was running against Lacey Clay, like, some people knew who Lacey Clay was. Other people was like, who? I don't know him. I don't know anything about, I don't know his daddy. I don't know about old man Clay anymore. Mm-hmm. That was the difference that has come into with the millennial generation now. Everybody wanna, you know, label as millennials, you know? So I think that's the difference. But if there continue to be people who are uninformed or don't think politics affect them at all, or they don't do politics, then we'll continue to have family dynasties. And I'm okay with a dynasty if they actually are about that business, about bringing resources, about fighting. Exactly. But if they're not, that's when we get trouble. That's when we get stuck.
But I'm gonna tell you, one of the things about a dynasty is that, you know, overall, I'm not throwing shade to voters. I love voters. But when it comes down to like research, like when I'm talking to somebody that's trying to run for office, I'm like, that's cute. Your platform is cute or whatever. The average voter ain't gonna know your platform. Like, they're not gonna know. Mm-hmm. Like, they show up with such a minimal amount of information that, to me, with my business background and doing so much in marketing, I'm like, it's all about marketing. Like, it's all about mm-hmm. what is cool, what makes you feel good, what gets you excited, especially when you're doing something like me where I won in a runoff. You gotta bring them people back. Like,
exactly.
President ain't on the ballot, right? Like, president pulls everybody out every time they can hear it. They ain't never voted. They ain't gonna never vote again. Like, you get everybody that shows up like for like a presidential, right? But when it comes to like all these other elections, especially a runoff, like, it has to be that you really like evoke like this emotion. And so when you say things like, oh yeah, the Paula Carter, like, there are people that remember her and remember like their experiences. So when somebody like a Chris Carter comes in, then it's like you got the benefit and the detriment, because anybody that feels some kind of way negatively, they're gonna feel negatively towards him. When it's like, dude, I ain't never even met you, right? So like, you get the benefit and you get the detriment, right? There's usually more benefit than detriment if they was elected, though. You know what I'm saying? So you get the benefit of that. I think that what happens is candidates will see a dynasty family and say, never mind. Like, people that really probably are very well equipped for the position, they'll just back down because they'll be like, there's no way I can beat a such and such, right? Mm-hmm. And so you don't see the challenges as often, right? Like, you see that Corey ran twice, lost the first time, won the second time. Like, it's about whether or not we're really in an age where people are more fearless and say, I'm gonna go after the dynasty anyway. Like, I ain't got nothing to lose. And that, I think, makes a bigger difference, because they say, but you risk so much, right? Like, when you run for office, like, the everyday voter doesn't really understand it this way, but you run for office and you don't put up good numbers, your political stock is gone.
It's done, right?
You can't just run if you don't win. You gotta look real good, right? Like, you know, that was one of, you know, it was interesting because when I was down, I was only down by like a little bit. Like, everybody that was at our watch party was like, well, that means you get to run again. I was like, oh, so I'm not gonna do it. But you're right, because I was positioned, because to only have raised about 100K to 500K, to go up against an incumbent, to be down, you know, less than 100 votes. No, I'm well equipped, because now people can look at my numbers and say, oh yeah, we gonna go on and put a little bit into her and she can make it. Or even those voters that thought, I didn't realize it was that important, I gotta show up this next time, because if I would have shown up. But if you lose and you don't put up good numbers, you got a problem. So a lot of people say
it's like being on a record label back in the 90s.
Yeah, like, if you don't put up, it's over for you.
Right. Yeah, you only have good first week numbers.
That's what I'm saying. Okay, you sell 80,000 that first week, it's over.
Yeah,
right.
That's the thing with Corey Bush as well. Like, shout out and much respect to her. That's one thing I recognize, is that people, like a huge amount of people in St. Louis, did not run against Clay because of that dynasty. Yeah. But now that he's out of the way, to a certain degree, because I mean, that this is all that he's done. Like, Clay, this is all he's been doing the past 20 plus years. He don't know anything else, so I don't know what else he's gonna do. I honestly do not know, right? But there's gonna be, could imagine, this is literally what I tell people, the wolves are going to come out.
See, the Empire, the New Republic in Star Wars.
But they could come out, but it's all on how Corey transitioned. And that was my next question for you, Judge. Did you how was the conversation with you and I can't say the I mean oh, yeah how was the conversation with you okay maybe I don't want to
the incumbent
that.
Listen, I ain't had no conversations with
why
the
not
one that, huh
the one
so,
that
so for me I have my own issues. So as it relates to the mayor, which, you know, there's still the incumbent that I'm really replacing who finished the term. It was only 2,500 people that voted in that race. So it's still a lot of people that just didn't even know that she existed in whatever, right? Like in our general that technically voted for me where I didn't have an opponent, it was 45,000 voters. Make sense?
Right.
So 2,500 is such like a small like number or whatever. But the majority of the district at least knew the mayor. Who, you know, I'm replacing. So our mayor is just a different guy. That's perfectly fine. He's not called me and I'm like, okay, that's kind of that. But my immediate predecessor, you know, she lied on my letters. Like it was just like things that she did when she crossed these lines. And I was like, listen, look, first of all, I've known you.
I'm going to tell you as somebody who used to be in politics a long time ago, that's something that, look, when you campaign, it's literally like war. I mean, you know that. It's like war. And at that time, like I used to tell folks, like, me and you cool, like now, but I was like, you about to see a whole other side as soon as you file or as soon, if I'm on the other side of you, we still cool after that time. But in between these times, I'm about to give you 100% of all the problems you want. But after that, hey, we cool. Let's sit down and let's figure out how we both can work together to fix our community. And I think that's something that us blacks, we always get wrong because we take it as a beef forever. You know, like I remember the first dude that I ran or one of the first guys when I was running in the state house, this dude named Anthony Bell. And I ain't gonna lie, I ran like I was scared. Like it was him and Curtis Royston. And these were two guys who had been around for a long time. Yeah, I was a young, fresh face with probably a better name. But these dudes scared me. Like I was like, man, every time I woke up, the dude would be he'll have signs everywhere. And I was like, how is he getting these signs? You know, I mean, like, well, how is he doing it? And it just came to a point where during campaign time, like, you know, like, I mean, I hated them. Like, I mean, we had a point where literally, like, it was about to be a for real fist fight between me and Anthony Bell. And
I remember, like, literally, I was at that polling place.
Yeah, he was there. And like, look, it looked like a gang war. Like, I remember pulling up in the Range Rover, hopping out with 20 dudes with me, and he had like 15 dudes with him, and we literally about to collide, and people like, man, this is who we want to vote for, and so, you know, it became a point after that where, like, I mean, we ended up talking, but it totally went there. You know what I'm saying? Like, it went there. You know, and it went there with a few other people who I didn't even have, like, I didn't even have to have a race with them, but it was a guy with me and Lacey. It went there. I literally, and
that was hilarious.
Brian was there.
Yeah, no, that story is hilarious.
I mean, like, yeah, I literally, like, approached him in my district like I was Nino Brown. Like, I was like, dude, what you doing on my sidewalk? You didn't pay this. I paved it. You got to get off the sidewalk. And it was a point where, you know, we just had to talk that out. And, you know, we had to come together for the community. And that's something that that white folks, they will come together for the common good of their people. But for us, we like, man, I ain't gonna never ever like him. I ain't gonna never ever talk to him. We can't work together on nothing. And that's something that we got to change. So maybe you should probably reach out to them.
So hold on. So Jazz, go into your story about your stalker that you have.
Yeah,
so your opponent.
So
let's go on.
My opponents were just a little different. Okay. So I currently have a license to carry, which I've always had a gun, but like it's a whole different story when you're like, oh, let me just go ahead and get licensed so I can carry this gun at all times. Because I had one opponent that was stalking me. Admittedly, she tried to sue me like 5 times in court. She was showing up to my house. This is what she testified to on the record. 2 to 3 times a day. I had her on camera at my home. One time she came over and she was looking like all in my windows, like she was ready to go ahead and just break in. Like it just was so insane. She was like somehow pulling water bills, sending them out. Like it was just like the level of ridiculousness. Like I can't even tell you like how many levels. So yes, I was ready to, you know, do some things. I did go ahead and finally handle her only just a few weeks ago. I have a lifetime protective order against her. So that's kind of that. And she's like,
I heard it, yo. Like that's
no, it was so bad. Like the levels of this, like when I did my affidavit to get my protective order, like the prosecutor was like, oh my gosh. I was like, I told y'all. Right. So then like when she was served with the temporary protective order, she called the prosecutor and she was like, you don't need to be in the middle of this. Like she was going and she told the prosecutor more stuff that I had forgotten about. This woman was putting up signs around like my neighborhood. And like, this is stuff I never could have, like from a lawyer perspective, like I never could have proved it was her, but I knew it was her, right? Like, it's kind of like when we're at the hair store or whatever, and we shopping and we know that they being racist, but like proving it is a whole other issue, right? So she literally admitted she was trying to, and for me, it was a safety concern because I do criminal defense. I deal with murderers, capital murderers, rapists, whatever. And now you're putting out these signs telling everybody where I live. She was trying to get my cars towed. I mean, it was bad. Like, it was so, so bad. So, like I said, it's got to be bad for you to get a lifetime protective order. Usually only, like, a serial rapist is going to get that, but whatever. So I got that. Then the other one who actually won the election, like, I did not appreciate this non-Greek deciding that she was going to lie on my letters. And I'm hearing about it from a bro that went to Grambling for homecoming. Like, yo, so they sitting up here, they talking about the race in Grambling, Louisiana. That's going on in Dallas because they were getting so frustrated because so many of the Greeks had my back, like everybody, like all of D9 was like, we in. They don't know
and
nothing
you,
about
and what you should have did at that point. Huh? Hey, and what you should have did at that point was tell everybody to send you $50.
Okay.
No, fundraiser.
Right. $19.13 right now.
So I mean, so she literally like did that, and then she just lied about so much stuff and like some mail and whatever. And the crazy part is that there were two insiders. So she's really a political consultant. She's not had like a real job. Like her whole life has been political consulting, which is why she ended up getting support from like all these big names. Yeah. Because she had been paid to work on their campaigns. Not right. Because she volunteered like most of us, but she had been paid. And so it was kind of like calling in those favors, right? So her and another political consultant, they called me because they heard through the grapevine that I was running. I was the first person to decide I was running. I wasn't the first person to come out because she decided, oh, I got to announce the day before her, right? Which I was like, I don't care. I got this. You know what I mean? So she called me and said, I just want to make sure that we're going to keep it clean. I was like, I ain't got no beef. Like, I'm good. Like, I'm going to be in my lane, do me. And in fact, to tell you like how Gucci I was, the only opponent that I didn't know prior to, he actually helped to move me down on yesterday. Oh, like okay. This, like, and on Thanksgiving, like literally, like his granny was like, where's Jasmine? She got food, she can come over. like his family. So we were like opposition, but it wasn't like that. You know what I'm saying? Like we would, I know what you're talking about, where it's almost like a basketball thing. Like, yeah, I'm gonna go hard, but like to the extent of, you know, like this chick, her best friend, who's a K, was like the political director for Biden's campaign in Texas. They don't know that I know that literally they made calls and threatened organizations that gave me endorsements. They wanted them to snatch my endorsements. The level of gutter. I'm like, listen, you know, like stupid little stuff, whatever, it comes with the territory. But it's certain like lines that you cross that you ain't never coming back. And the reality is that she ain't never served. She never got to come to Austin because we're part-time. So it ain't nothing that you can tell me, teach me, whatever, right?
Oh, okay.
So I'm like, you good. If there's anybody that I need to speak with, it's really the mayor because he's the one that served. But he's catching a lot of hell. So I'm like, I'm not even finna like fuck with him like that because he's catching a lot. Like he's taking certain stances on like the defund movement and stuff like that that aren't very popular.
What is he saying about defund? He's saying he not with it? For real? Black man? Black mayor?
Black man.
Marco, let's move to Dallas.
Black man.
Put that tie back on, Marco.
Put that tie back on.
Shoot back up.
From my district. So the city councilman that is, so this seat has always been like, so I don't know. I think I have like 5 city councilmen in my district, but I have 1 city councilman. So we have a total of, the horseshoe is 14.
So Jasmine, is city councilman equal to alderman for St. Louis?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Sorry. So we have 14 or whatever. We have a lot of them, right? To represent the entire city of Dallas. So the one district that's the largest that's in my district, in my house district, it almost takes up like 100% of my house district. That seat has always been black. The last city councilman, he ran this boy over on a bike. So he left the scene. So he got arrested. Damn. So when it came up for re-election, he did run. Listen, it'd be off the chain in Dallas. So he did run, but because he had, that was only like his first term, so he didn't get reelected. But there's always like a ton of people that run. So there were like, I think like 10 or 11 people that ran. All of them was black except for one. One was Hispanic. Guess what happened?
The Hispanic won.
So the black vote did what?
Jasmine, let me ask you a quick question. Y'all don't have approval voting, do you?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, they do. So they do a runoff. They do a runoff.
They do. Marco, they do a runoff. Got a runoff. Yeah.
Wait a minute. What was the question? No, we do runoff.
You all have approval voting in Dallas.
Yeah, they do.
No. If you don't get 50%, then you gotta go to a runoff.
Oh.
Yeah, that's approval voting, right?
No. That's
no different. Approval is the top 2 people in the primary automatically go to the finals, basically.
Oh yeah, that's what we have.
That's what they do.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's Marco, but when you got so many people running work, though, when you got that many people running, and then you got one Hispanic, like one Latino, like you know what, you got one person running, then yeah, that's gonna be a problem. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean he's.
Hey, how often do they run, Jasmine?
They run every 2 years, so he's up now. So he was actually the first city councilman to come out and support me, which was
so you
very,
gotta be and be with him.
And I am. It was very.
I feel it.
It was very proud of him. But either way though, like he saw how we were operating in the street. So I got pissed off because we have three elected black city councilmen, and then we have a black mayor, right? So we have at least 4 of those people on the horseshoe. But when it came to like these protests and that kind of stuff, there was like 1 black city councilman that I would see, but consistently I would see 3 Hispanic city councilmen. And I mean, we had this big like national story because the black female police chief was trying to arrest like 400 something people on a bridge that were protesting. And that bridge actually leads to my district, like leads to West Dallas.
Oh, dang.
And she was trying to arrest them. So I like jumped up in my moo-moo because I was like helping all of these protesters or whatever. And she's a Sora. So I'm like, what is going on? You know, it's these 3 Hispanic city councilmen, they were there on their bridge too. And they was like, if y'all arrest them, y'all gotta arrest us too. Like they were going hard. So I was like, listen, I get that this is quote unquote supposed to be a black seat, but being a black seat is about doing what's right for black people. Mm-hmm. And this is a guy who has gone, he's the one that's led the charge on the defund movement. So it's just interesting that our mayor came from really kind of that district, like that city council district. Like that was what he represented for the House district. And he's like completely anti, and he lost all the city council. So what he's doing now, like when I say his hands are tied, is he's running people against all of them that were leading the defund movement. And none of them that were leading the defund movement are Black. Yeah. And Dallas didn't really, like, they didn't go ham. Like, here in Austin, like, people are like, oh my God, they really did a defund. Like, they really, like, put some money. Our budget is stupid, and, like, our police have maybe 60% of our entire budget. And they took $7 million from overtime. They ain't such, like, that's all they did, was took $7 million. I'm like, I mean, they, but he moved the needle. So now you got all these Black people that are running, because I've gotten calls, and I'm like, y'all know that he would support me. So I'm supporting him. Like, if he doesn't do wrong by us, then I'm not going to not support him, right? And right. So, you know, I'm like, I'm riding with him or whatever. And I'm like, I can't, like, I'm a loyal person, number one. But it's, they're about to do the same thing. It's about to be 50 Black people running.
And him.
They're going to split the vote. And he's going to walk back into it, because he's going to get some Black vote. Like, now, like, those Black people that didn't vote for him before, mostly probably because he wasn't Black, now that they see how down he is, they're like, oh, yeah. And the crazy part is that he posted recently when his grandfather died. It was a Black man. I was like, but when he ran, even though that could have helped him, like pictures or something like that, he never did it. He never did it. So it was like a step grandfather or something, but like all of his, like he grew up with like all these Black cousins and whatever. I never knew, and he never ever played that card. So, like, I mean, it's mad love and respect for him. I really do have it. You know, I just want us to do better. I want us to work together. So I agree with you, Chris. Like, I get it, right? That former opponent that helped to move me down, like, he literally packed up some of my stuff in his SUV, drove it down, helped to move me in, helped to move my chief of staff in, like did the physical labor, then went and paid for like all of our food, donating money. Like, he's like for real, but he's a housing guy. So I had some developers come to me about some housing stuff that I didn't understand, right? So I was like, right, before I take this meeting, I need to call him, because that's who I trust to give me, like bring me up to speed, like teach me, like what does this mean, right? So we sat and talked for hours, and he was like, this is what you need to know, this and this and this and this. So we like worked together. And for me, I would rather, especially this new generation of like Black electeds, I would rather us get to the point that we really are working together, and we are creating a pipeline so that those that are coming behind us can actually come through, not have the learning curve that we have. But, you know, most people don't have that kind of cooperative spirit. Like, this session, I'm the only new incoming Black elected state rep, and there's definitely not a state senator like in the state of Texas. Like, that's insane. We had Black people run, but they didn't win. And so I just want us to do better.
Is the Black caucus very active or no?
Huh?
Is the Black caucus?
She answered your question.
All right.
So there are no Black state senators in the state of Texas?
No, we have two. We have a bruh, and we have an alpha. So we have two Black.
That's the whole state, though, right? That's all the way from Houston, San Antonio, everywhere.
So yeah, so historically we get one out of Houston and we get one out of Dallas. That's what happens. So the seats that Barbara C. Jordan had, and the seat that Eddie Bernice Johnson had. So we've only had two Black women. And they held their seats for a while. I mean, Barbara C. Jordan was there for quite some time. And then you've had Roy. I mean, Royce is seemingly wanting to do a dynasty. Like, his son and I are like this. We're like super duper tight. He went to law school down in Houston as well. So I've known him for some time. But Royce West has been in that seat for the last 27 years. And Boris has been there, I don't know how long. He ended up going in after Rodney Ellis, who then decided to be a county commissioner in Houston. So, I mean, Black men usually get elected to those seats. we don't really see Black women, and those seats don't open. Like, somebody either got to come for you and really know what they're doing, or it's just yours.
Dang.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. Like, I so when they thought we were going to flip the house, there were people announcing that they were running for speaker. So Texas has never had anything but a white man. We ain't never had no women. We ain't never had no Hispanics. We ain't never had none but white men be speaker, right? So, of course, you're thinking, you know, if there's going to be history made, it's going to be made on the Democratic side. So we got to wait till the House flip. And so they really were thinking, because they paid, in my opinion, too much attention to polling. I'm like, did y'all not learn from Hillary? Like, y'all better keep them streets, but, you know, whatever. And man, so the senior member of the House on the Democratic side is actually a Black woman. She has been a member of the House for like 44 years.
Damn.
I mean, 44 years, yeah.
Damn.
Black woman. So she was running.
So they don't have term limits. They don't have term limits in Texas then. Because Missouri has term limits though, right?
Man, I'm moving.
There's a lot of places.
No, I don't. Wait a minute. Does Missouri have term limits on the legislative side?
Yeah, 8 years.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
No, it's just like the feds over here, you know? You can have your Nancys and all of them, right? Like, they just be there forever. It's exactly the same. Our governor doesn't have it either.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. Is governor a term limit in Missouri, Chris?
Yeah.
Oh, the governor's a term limit too?
2 terms.
Yeah.
Right? 8 years.
Usually, if anybody gets term limited, it's usually the executor, you know, so just like president and our governors. But like, Perry was the longest running governor. He was Rick Perry. He was like our governor forever. But yeah, no, we don't have term limits at all. So it does lead to people kind of being there forever, like, and ever and ever. So, you know, everybody keeps saying, are you going to stay forever? And I'm like, no, I signed a term limits pledge. I believe in term limits.
I think things
get stagnant. I think, you know, like, even when we're thinking about our laws and trying to keep up with technology, if you're like 90 years old, like, I mean, I know I'm behind on TikTok, right? Like, so I'm like, you can't keep up with the legislation that's required, like, with the technology, like, even if we do like a very basic thing, like, I'm not saying like you got to kick all the old people out or whatever, but at some point in time, I just think if you become stagnant, or if you've kind of reached like a certain level, it's like time to, you know, encourage and groom the next person and get them in there with like fresh eyes. It's not really a philosophy that a lot of people like that I support, but I do. So I have no intentions. Y'all can run the tape on being there for the next 20 years whatsoever. You know, it's either kind of move on and move up, or just move on. Like, it's going to be one of the two. Move on or move up. Like, I don't plan to kind of just stay stagnant.
Man, Jazz, this has been dope, Jazz. This went totally different than I thought it was going to go, but this is...
Yeah, we're going to have her back, man.
Yeah, I was like, because you got to tell your story at some point, man, like your whole journey from, you know, here to, you know, down to Memphis, where you used to kick it at Rhodes College and, you know, in Houston. Shout out to you. Jazz is a grinder, because her law school was in... what was it? And it was in... when she was at Texas Southern, they were in mobile homes.
Oh,
I remember I went to go pick her up from the mobile.
We were in the trailers.
It was in trailers. I was down in Houston for work. I went to pick her up at the mobile. I was like, I think I'm in the wrong spot, because the school over there. She's like, no, you in the right spot. I'm coming out.
Yeah. Now the struggle was real, baby. But I must say, while I graduated from the University of Houston, Thurgood is my love, my life. There's nothing. I mean, that's the only time I went to a HBCU, which was for 1 year. But I completely understand the difference in the experience. And if there's any way for any Black person who's seeking any higher ed degree, I would encourage them to attend HBCU, because it's just completely different.
Yeah.
Like, even once I left, my professors were still very invested in me. My professors still follow me now, right? Like, they're still like, yes, like, that's our girl. Like, they're so proud of me. I don't know. I can't even tell you who my University of Houston professors were. Like, I mean, but I know like the names of my Thurgood professors, and they stayed invested even once I left. And I was like, I don't know what they're talking about in con law. I need you to break this down for me. And like, literally I had, he's now a dean, but he would sit down with me and tutor me to make sure I understood, because they weren't really teaching like in a way that I really understood very well. And I only passed con law because of him. And then, you know, here it is that I do civil rights work, right? So, but he's the one that really like got me there. So yeah, mad love for HBCUs as far as the actual educational part. As far as the finance part, well, y'all know the story.
Yeah. They need full-time fundraisers.
No, because like, we got so much to talk about with Jasmine. She's been working with Lee Merritt, man. Like, she's been doing a lot of dope stuff down there in Texas, man. Like, that. This a whole, we're going to have to do a part two.
Yeah, no, we need a part
definitely,
two.
Definitely do a part two. Oh, Blake told me to tell you what's up too, Jazz. I forgot he wanted me to listen to the show too.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. Let him know I said hi.
Shout out to my boy Blake, man. He's like a model, man, over in Norway.
Wow.
And he went to CBC Christian Brothers College in Memphis.
Yeah.
Instagram right is B Schaefer.
From Rose.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about like he's model. Like I'm talking about like Calvin Klein, like, you know, obsession. He's the white boy on the front of them, like with the obsession with the abs out.
That's what's up.
Yeah. So yeah. But Jazz, where can they hit you up at and donate? Well, they can't donate
what
now.
Can they donate
at? Yeah, no, they can. They can. Don't be okay, telling okay. Me.
I know that. I know you said it's a donation. We don't want to have the fans knocking on you.
Listen, they just need to click the link. If the link works, that means they can donate.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. No, so where can I hit you up at?
But yeah, so on all social media, I'm Jasmine for 100. So it's Jasmine, and then the word for for, and then 100. And then my website is the same, jasmineforone100.com, and they can donate there. Once again, if there's no donate link, then that means that you know, we're shut down. But I run every 2 years. So it'll be back if you just check back sometime after session. So I'll be in Austin probably until at least September, maybe until December. So I'll be here for quite some time. But after that, you know, we'll be back to it. We'll be grinding it out because my next election will take place in March of 2022.
All right, cool. Well, maybe we could come down and hit some doors for you.
Yeah.
That'd be actually kind of dope. That'd be a little trip.
Heck yeah. Hey, I want to make sure that St. Louis and everybody else who's watching this, definitely go to Jasmine4100 and support. Like I donated, like I said, I donated a little bit.
Yeah.
I want to make sure people know we got to support our own. We got to support those who are representing and support those who got those fresh ideals right now too. That's actually going to do that work. And I mean, Jasmine's already highly accredited already. Like, it's
we didn't get into the credentials yet. We just went into the political side. We ain't even get into the real game of it.
Please support her. And knowing that your support is making a difference in Texas. And when we have an impact in different states across the country, we can start actually focusing on national policy as well, or encouraging the push and the changes of national policy too. So please, like, definitely support Jasmine4100.
Jasmine4100. Jasmine, thank you for being on Policy. You're going to have to come back. You know, we want to, you know, chop it up with you some more, because we're going to, like I said, we got so much more to talk to you about too.
And if you ever come to like, can you go to like different states and raise money as well?
Or I can get money anywhere.
Yeah, I'm about to say we might have to do a joint here in St. Louis.
Yeah, part two. Yeah. Policy as usual, part two. Shout out to, I didn't even know that. So that's why the party was big for you, Chris. Going back to the fundraiser for a second.
Yeah.
That's why that was a big event.
Money for.
Okay.
Long story short, Jasmine, I had called Daryl. And I was asking him for some money while we were fundraising. He's like, "I ain't got no money, but I'll throw a party
for you."
and it raised a ton of money for me.
Yeah.
Wow.
And people kicked it. I'm talking about, this is the first, I mean, I think it's the dopest fundraiser for under 30 at the time. We was under 30 at the time, ever. Yep. I'm talking about 300 people there, all suited
suits
and booted.
And everything.
Suits, everybody suited and booted.
Yeah. No, we had to do a similar fundraiser. I think we may have raised about 18,000 that night, where we did a ball. So I did a fireball, and we had the DOC, we had DeRoe, we had like one of our really big radio personalities. And then you mentioned Lee Merritt, my former partner, and just some other big activists. we just like was like, yo, we need to use your persona. Like, we need y'all to come through if you can. And so people showed up and paid, you know, $100 or more per ticket. And it was great. And it sucked because we were gonna make it an annual fundraiser, because it allows people to participate without feeling like they didn't get anything. Cause it's hard for people to get money and they ain't getting nothing in return. Mm-hmm. So it was like open bar, it was food, it was music, it was great, but you know, we couldn't do it this year because of COVID. So we did it like October of like last year, and it was an instant success. So we're gonna try to revamp it, but that's one way to kind of get the everyday person involved with politics that doesn't really pay attention or really care.
Right. Definitely.
Once again, Jasmine for 100. Go ahead, Marco.
I'm about to say, Jasmine, when you come to St. Louis, we're gonna have an Aria reunion.
Hold on, let me zoom back in on that. Let me zoom back in on that, brother. Let me zoom back in.
All the positions. I can't. It won't work. But yeah, we're all the positions together. Have a reunion fundraiser. Hey, it's some big hitters in there too. Like, don't like. Hey, it's some like that 9-9 man. Doctor.
No, Boyle, it was. I mean, Hadia is like
cancer.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. She's like on the cutting edge of like curing cancer for like everybody in the world.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so
I mean, it's pretty dope.
Yeah, so definitely. Yeah. All right. Appreciate you.
Jasmine 100. Appreciate you, Jazz, as always.
Thank y'all. Love y'all.